Welcome to From Land to Salish Sea, and for this episode, we're going to continue gushing about how cool the Salish Sea is. I think I'll call this episode 0.5, Geodiversity of the Salish Sea. And geodiversity is such an amazing word to describe the Salish Sea. Just like the biodiversity is a great term to describe the marine mammals of the Salish Sea, and these two terms come together as the great variety of geography and topography allow for more variation of undersea habitats. And so, in addition to a larger diversity of fish, there's a larger diversity of prey for these marine mammals to capture, which is like building upon each other in terms of where you would find food, where one's like instincts would be to find food, and having the Salish Sea with its great biodiversity allows for more options in terms of where to find food, how to find food, and also what to eat as food. So, without further ado, let's go below the waters of the Salish Sea. And it's pretty cool that the water depths in the Salish Sea are highly variable, and that's due to the geologic processes that happened once upon a time. And the glaciers carved a path through the mountains, so you'll find like near vertical fjord walls against deep water and just water close to shore. And this geodiversity is in the seafloor also allows for a great variety of distinct marine habitats. You can see a lot of evidence of glaciation whenever there's like striated bedrock. What comes to mind is the south end of Lopez Island, or even some cross-channel sills like at Eagle Cliff on Cypress Island. These glaciers delivered massive amounts of rock, gravel, sand, and mud to the Puget Sound, Strait of Georgia, and Strait of Juan de Fuca, depositing these sediment wherever there was some geologic obstacle that slowed the flow of ice, or whenever the glaciers, you know, quote unquote, paused in their journey for whatever reason. And the mud that makes up things like False Bay are derived from glacial clays that occur in San Juan Valley. And these wave-like deposits in the sand in these submerged dune fields also reflect the natural, really artistic nature of the undersea and of the tidal currents. And so looking into the seafloor, we'll go into the field of bathymetry. Ah, yes, bathymetry, the study of the ocean floor, and also bathymetric maps. These bathymetric maps have identified plate tectonics and structural evidence of like the great feats of glacial ice, from fault traces to gas emitting seafloor craters associated with fault zones. It really shows the Juan de Fuca plate remains a vital force in the Salish Sea in terms of geodiversity. And one of the many marine habitats that the Salish Sea has are diverse tidepools in the intertidal zone. And you can find so many wonderful creatures. You can find these sculpins, anemone, sea stars, snails, crabs, nudibranchs. Love me a good nudibranch, and so much more. So tide pooling in the intertidal zone is a great window into the nearshore marine world. And like, unless you're a diver, the opportunity to observe marine life in such deep water is pretty rare. And so the marine habitat type of especially a tide pool in the intertidal zone, it harbors a distinctive community of plants and animals evolutionarily adapted to physical and biological challenges posed by their environment. You know, a lot of these like barnacles have to have adapted to be able to withstand the heat, to be able to withstand like high intertidal zones, whereas things like chitons or even sea stars, nudibranchs, they tend to be found in lower intertidal zones. And while they're not found like in the deep, well, they could be found in the deep, but most of them try to find like a lot of the little microbes and zooplankton, phytoplankton, or towards the surface where the light usually catches. And so it's always really cool, especially going to places like Going to just things like Cattle Point. That's a really good place. 4th of July Beach. Well, 4th of July Beach isn't really a typo, but there are some. Or even just around like Friday Harbor when it's a great low tide. It's always nice to be able to turn over some rocks, just observe some of the typos that I've collected and seeing what kind of creatures are there and what kind of, especially like seaweed, algae are left over and, you know, whether they'll, are they going to survive? Because if the lower they are, the more likely they'll be cooled down by the water and not dried up. The higher they are, well, somebody made a mistake when they were planning where to live for the rest of their lives. So yeah, tide pools are honestly one of my favorite things here at Friday Harbor Labs and just like the Salish Sea in general. And in addition to that, one of those many marine habitats, there's also submerged mountains with ledges and an abundance of really loose rocks. And that's really common in the Salish Sea. And those are awesome habitats for things like rockfish, abalone. There are also these glass sponge reefs, and they act as a refuge for small marine animals like how I said, there was rockfish. There's also juvenile rockfish that love to be in these reforming glass sponges. Underwater dune fields, awesome. They are just such a great place for animals to utilize their protective camouflage, burrowing, or even their filter feeding lifestyles. And so a lot of places, especially wherever rivers and streams empty into shelter bays, the accumulation of fine sediment form this other marine habitat, subtidal deltas and mudflats. And those are another ideal place for filter feeding shellfish, worms, and other invertebrates. One of the best mudflats here at the San Juan Island is False Bay. False Bay, when it's a phenomenal low tide, you can find so many amazing things. You find mud shrimps. Oh, they're just, it's a bit of a trek, and honestly, make sure you don't get your boots stuck in there, but it is on great place to study the biodiversity and even like the prey that some of the marine mammals might consider eating, especially when they're given the choice. And we might be able to talk about that in some future podcast episodes. Yeah, and so in the end, this is all just to say that geology ends up controlling everything, and it's the unique history and geography of the Salish Sea that yielded a wide range of diversity in the marine animals in this region. It's also thanks to all the geological processes of sediment that was being tossed around, tidal currents that's slowly shaping and creating all these deltas and sheltered bays, and making sure that the sediment gets to where they are now, that we're able to have all these different diversity, able to help have creatures in these habitats, and we're able to observe these creatures in these habitats. So geology controls everything. It's an amazing world of exploration out there, so I highly encourage you right after this, if you can, go visit a place near the water, find some cool things, go dock lighting, look for some pelagic and benthic fish. Oh, the different tides are amazing, and it's great to just see how the Salish Sea works as like an estuary. And while the tidal currents are also just two ebbs and two flood tides each day, and they drive that inland, like it's kind of like an engine, like the sea circulation engine. So lots of things to explore here, and thank you for joining me. This is Jonathan Kwong from Land to Salish Sea signing off, and yeah, have a great rest of your day.